Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Reminding everybody out there that loves football or baseball, Orioles, Ravens, wherever you are, make sure you set a spot on your dial for AM 1570 in your car. You still come in on the radio. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. What are we going to be doing on Wednesday at Coco's, on Friday at Cooper's downtown, next Thursday at Costas, the following Tuesday at Pappas, what we call the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We give out scratch-offs. We talk about our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean, and at Jiffy Lube Multicare, always keeping the oil fresh for me. And we appreciate their annual sponsorship and their support for all that we do around here that allows double duty on a week like this where the Orioles are home taking on the Braves and the Phillies. We're going to be out doing Crab Cake Tours. Fleet Week's happening this week. Lots and lots of spring-ish stuff happening, including sort of the end of, and we'll let the Players Association figure this out later, the end of the calendar for practice, and then what becomes real 6-8 weeks from now when teams reconvene to start playing fake football in a real way. Luke Jones will be in Owings Mills this week for mandatory camp. And you know, last week OTAs, and we talk about OTAs and Lamar and him being slimmer and him being around then not around then around again, and what all of that means, organized team activities. What makes this week different from a fan's perspective, just to, you know, for folks that don't know that this is the big one, as Fred G. Sanford once said?
Well, I mean, the big difference is it's mandatory, so all the veterans who have been in and out over the spring, and we've talked about this, and you know, we went back to debate and scrimmage the whole Lamar Jackson absence thing and quarterbacks being held to a different standard. But we know veteran players frequently are, they're there for a week and then they're not there for a week, or they're not there for the first couple weeks and they're there for the last week, or a lot of guys over the years, and we saw this even with the Ravens, that you know, over this 3-week OTA period. Like, for example, Kyle Hamilton and some other guys were there the first week, and then we didn't see them after that. But everyone who's under contract and healthy, presumably, unless there's an unexpected holdout, I don't really know who that would be for the Ravens at this point in time, they're there for these 3 days. And you get your first look at, okay, what's this going to look like in its totality? And sure, there might be a couple guys here and there. Like, for example, Marlon Humphrey's been a little limited this spring. You know, I don't know if it's stemming from the foot or the calf issue. I mean, he had so many, you know, nagging injuries last year that really limited him. But you're going to see all these guys, and you're going to see what this looks like. And
there's a speed to this, right? I mean, there's a real speed where wide receivers are running maybe not 101% max effort, but this is a competitive. When I was there, but back when I was a media member, the first 27 years, this was a competitive sort of fiery little bit of getting to know each other, and some level of John wants to get something that feels full speed out of this.
Yeah. I mean, you're still no contact, right? I mean, that's still part of the equation here. So you're not fully competing, but yeah, every time you add more veterans to the mix inherently, and it's typically from the rookies and all the fringe guys on the roster that know that they're not as short of a 53-man roster spot, inherently the competition level bumps up a little bit, even if the Kyle Van Noys are kind of going through the motion, so to speak. And I just use him as an example of a guy. Hey, he's in his 30s. You know, he's not getting a whole lot out of this other than just running around and showing the team that, hey, I'm in decent shape and I'm here, you know.
But the Tylan Wallace types, you know, want to catch balls here. Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, I mean, you know, whether you're talking about backup outside linebackers, you know, we've talked so much about the offensive line, which to me is front and center as far as what I'm looking at this week. Not that whoever's lining up as the starters this week are going to be the starters week one, because we know that that's not remotely the case necessarily, but who's in the mix? I'll give you a perfect example of what you can take away this time of year. And I've used this example a lot, talking about the rookie sixth-round pick last year, Big Saleh. He was the left guard to start training camp. And what do we know? He ended up not playing a single regular season snap. But even though you shouldn't put too much into that, what you can look at is some trends, some tendencies. Ben Cleveland, talked about him a lot the last few years, right? Former third round pick. When they drafted him a few years back, they were really excited about him. To this point, as he's entering a contract year, If you'd say thumbs up or thumbs down on that third round pick, you'd say thumbs down, right? He hasn't played much. You know, it hasn't become a starter. Last year, and even the year before that, at this point, talking May and early June, if you had asked anyone who they thought the left guard would be, Ben Cleveland was the favorite. You know, I do, and I've talked about this before, and your old pal Howard Balzer is the editor for the Lindy's Pro Football Preview. And I've had the opportunity to do that the last few years. My deadline for that is right after the draft, and I do a projected starting lineup. Ben Cleveland has been the left guard that I picked each of the previous 2 years. That never materialized. And I can tell you, in late May and early June, Ben Cleveland wasn't really running with the ones, and he was actually playing more right guard than left guard. So that's where I said, well,
Projections in April make a fool of you, right? Like, and dude, by the way, love Howard, love the Lindys, love the Athlons, always love the Sporting News before I have worked there. You know, I used
right.
the spy and I have a collection of them, as you well know, in the radio station on the wall from the old days and old draft guides and all of that stuff. Those season previews are like Bibles to me in baseball season and even
Right.
baseball lineups and pitching rotations that you're thinking about in December that go to publication in February. Man, we're in a different environment, totally, you know, but you're trying to encapsulate that as best you can in spring. And I don't know that you could do that across anywhere in the NFL at this point, specifically in places like the offensive line and defensively, where, you know, even if you have a great front seven, you're still using 18 starters, you know, on the defense, 16 starters in the NFL with subs and sub packages and all of those things. But the offensive line, every coach would love the April offensive line to be the December offensive line. Just never works out that way, man, ever.
Right. And just to finish that point again, it's not who's the first team left guard, who's the second team left guard. For me, it's okay, who are the candidates? Who is lining up there? And that's why I use Ben Cleveland as an example. 22 and 23, if you had asked me in April, who's the favorite to be the left guard, I would have said Ben Cleveland. But what we soon would see in OTAs and minicamp was not only was he not the starting left guard, he wasn't the second team left guard either. He was actually playing right guard and he was actually playing right tackle. That tells you, okay, I don't think Ben Cleveland's in the mix there. And yes, can things change come training camp? Of course they can. My point is, it's the little subtleties so much that you're looking at this time of year, more so than, okay, who's with the first team? Who's with the second team? You know, right now, left guard. If you ask me who the favorites are, and Ben Cleveland's much more in the mix at right guard, but the two guys that I would say we've talked a lot about for Voorhees, right? You know, Andrew Voorhees, we've talked about him, the seventh round pick from last year, torn ACL at the combine. That's why he was a seventh round pick as opposed to probably maybe a fourth or fifth round pick. So him, but I'd also say don't sleep on Josh Jones, veteran guy they brought in. You know, was with the Houston Texans, you know, was with Arizona before that. He started some games in the league, mixed results, feels very John Simpson-like. And I don't mean that that means he's definitely going to be the starter. I'm saying that in terms of don't dismiss his chances for that reason, because it feels similar. So this time of year, it's not about sweeping conclusions. It's not about strong opinions as far as what's going to happen. It's more the subtle things. What are you seeing? And maybe more interestingly enough, what aren't you seeing? And that's why I use Ben Cleveland as the example, because a couple years ago, it was the Ben Powers year. Ben Powers ended up winning the left guard job and parlayed it into a nice contract with the Denver Broncos. But at this time, at that point in the offseason 2 years ago, people were talking about Ben Cleveland, and meanwhile, Ben Powers, who was in a contract year, much like Ben Cleveland now, kind of he seized the brass ring and he was able to turn it into a nice contract for himself. So, you know, you try to project, and this is what I don't want to say is unsettling, but I think is, you know, something to remember. I talk about this all the time, and offensive line is obviously the big position group this year with the amount of turnover they have there. You said it, you hit the nail on the head in April. You're always thinking how you want things to go, right? Yeah, this guy is going to be ready to step into this spot. We signed this guy to compete at this spot. And those plans in April and May and June that feel so promising and you feel confident and you have conviction about it, there are quite often, not all the time, because sometimes it works perfectly, but quite often it doesn't work out that way. And that's why I said, right now. They're trying to evaluate as much as they have, but you're going to sit here and try to guarantee me that their starting left guard is on someone else's roster right now? I'm not going to sit here and say that's impossible. Or if you say they're starting right tackle because Roger Rosengarten isn't quite ready to step into the starting job, they might go acquire this year's version of Morgan Moses. I'm not going to say that's impossible come late August. So right now you're just trying to evaluate, understanding that it's not full-blown contact. And yeah, you're working on technique, and there's a little bit of there are competitive juices flowing, but it's not even the second week of training camp level of competition, let alone talking about preseason games where guys are duking it out for jobs, or obviously getting into the regular season where it counts. This time of year, football fans, they love it because you want that fix, and we're tracking who's out on the field. For the most part, other than Keaton Mitchell, this team is pretty healthy in a big picture sense. Some guys are banged up right now that have missed some OTAs, but Mitchell's the one guy where you say, hey, he's not going to be back probably until best case scenario Thanksgiving. If he gives you a change of pace to Derrick Henry in December and January, great. Or he may not play this year. I mean, that's the nature of a mid-December ACL tear like he had last year. So, but beyond that, they're pretty healthy. You want to get through these 3 days staying healthy. The last thing you want is some kind of season-shifting injury. Not even talking about the most extreme cases, but just a starting caliber player. You lose and suddenly you've got another spot. You have another hole that you need to try to address. So, this week, like I said, it's much more on the margins. It's much more subtle as far as, to me, having done this a number of years, the observations. And look, I'll do my 12 Ravens thoughts and I'll tell you who looks good and who dropped a bunch of passes or who made a diving catch in 11 on 11 red zone period. But it really is trying to pick up on, okay, who's really in the mix at left guard? Who's really in the mix at right tackle? This time of year, they tend to defer to the veteran players. So, like, I fully expect Daniel Faalele to be lining up at right tackle right now, even if I think Rosengarten has a better chance to be the starter come week one. So you kind of sift through all those filters that this time of year of, what's real and what matters and what doesn't matter, which most of it doesn't matter, if I'm being fully honest. But you're just trying to gauge where things are right now. And as I said, to me, I mean, you can look at some other depth spots where, outside linebacker, the number three safety replacing Geno Stone. I mean, that's a position that very much I could still see being someone who's roster currently coming in and filling that role. But it's the offensive line. We've talked about it. Lamar Jackson, his odds of being in the MVP mix again and taking this team late deeper into January, and Derrick Henry, whatever he's going to look like. So much of this comes back to, what's your O-line going to look like? And you feel great about Linderbaum. You're hopeful about Ronnie Stanley, right? And to his credit, he's been out there all spring and has taken every rep. And I think he's really read the room in terms of where his career is at this point. But he's still a question mark. I mean, we've been talking about that for 3 or 4 years now, and let alone talking about who's playing left guard, who's playing right guard, who's playing right tackle. I mean, that's a lot. So, yeah, I'm going to be looking at that. But am I going to come away from this week saying, with any conviction who I really truly think is going to be the starter at any of those spots? No. But I think we'll have a better idea of who's really in the mix and who are they really envisioning as the competitors at each spot. Because, like I said, last couple of years, I thought it was Ben Cleveland at left guard in 22. I thought it'd be Ben Cleveland at left guard last year. And after seeing him work on the, not even work at that position during mandatory minicamp, it's like, okay, I don't think he's going to be in the mix there unless something changes pretty dramatically. Because if he's working at other positions entirely, it probably is an indicator that they think he's better off somewhere else. And hopefully for their sake, that place is right guard for Ben Cleveland as he's going into a contract year.
Well, far be it from me to be mean to Cleveland. I've never been mean to any Clevelands, certainly
Yeah.
not Ben Cleveland. You take the opportunity when you use a third round pick and you think you're going to get that guy on the field and you can't get him on the field for whatever reason and you're up on contract and you and I are still, it's June, it's not even April anymore. Draft's over with. They are where they are. They have this complement of players. He's a guy that knows the system, knows the quarterback, knows the cadence, knows is way ahead of class from where the kid that they drafted this year, the starting right tackle is going to be, or thinks he's going to be a starting right tackle. They hope he's going to be.
Right.
All of these are dart throws. They're all starters until it starts and they're off the depth chart and they've moved positions. What happened with Cleveland? Well, give me the real rub on what happened from we love him, we think he's the guy, to can't get on the field, and he's certainly not the guy we thought he was, which was a left guard and a starter.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is, I think sometimes you kind of look at where they are, where they're evolving as an offensive line, and that's where I'm still, I still do have some skepticism because he's more of the power, really big guy that, you do question, okay, is it going to be able to pull and do the things that you need to do as a guard? But I think for him, we've talked about this a lot, Nestor, and that's where I still have some healthy skepticism, not pessimism, with Roger Rosengarten. And look, I think he's a really good prospect. I think they got good value drafting him late in the second round the way they did. But we've talked about this, we talked about this going into the draft where, unless you're picking in the top 15 spots in the first round, it is really difficult drafting offensive linemen that are ready to come play and start as rookies right away. I mean, that's why Tyler Linderbaum was so impressive in what he did as a rookie, So I think with Cleveland, it was some of that. I think they're absolutely, and John Harbaugh's talked about this, so I'm not talking out of turn here. He had some nagging injuries, and I think there were some times where they wanted his conditioning to be a little bit better, and he missed some practice time his first couple years. That time on task for any position, but especially offensive line, where repetition and cohesiveness and building chemistry on the offensive line and moving as one, right? I mean, it's that being synchronized and understanding, especially if you're going to do zone blocking the way that they've kind of shifted and pivoted to more of that under Todd Monken compared to Greg Roman, you've got to be on the same page. So when you are missing practice time, when you're already trying to learn and you're already trying to develop and you're missing out on that, I mean, it just puts you behind the eight ball. So I think that's really probably the biggest thing that hurt Ben Cleveland his first couple years. And then I think they identified that, okay, his skill set probably wasn't quite as conducive on the left side as maybe playing right guard. And I think that kind of showed up. Now, they had Kevin Zeitler the last couple of years. Then Cleveland wasn't going to unseat Kevin Zeitler. Kevin Zeitler played at a Pro Bowl level, at his time with the Ravens. But what you did see the last couple of years were those rare occasions, and I think it was, three starts, I think it may have been, and maybe some playing time in a couple other games, but Ben Cleveland played right guard and replaced Kevin Zeitler on those rare occasions when he was banged up, and he played pretty well there. So I think there's hope that it finally clicks for him, but we've talked about this offensive line play, with college, so much of the, lack of three-point stance and pro-style offenses and these teams, having – throwing the ball so much and all these different styles and all these different variables that have impacted offensive line play, not to mention what a coach will tell you in terms of less time on the field in the spring and less time on the field during training camp with not having two-a-days and all of that. And we could certainly debate that. That's a coach's perspective. That doesn't mean it's the gospel truth, but it's certainly another factor in the discussion in terms of why these offensive linemen don't develop more rapidly. I mean, we've seen this how many different times now? Ben Powers was the example 2 years ago where, he finally didn't really figure it out until, halfway through his third year and then really, kind of took off in his contract year. We've seen that with how many different guys on the offensive line where you kind of think bust, 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 and then it's like, oh, okay, well, he wasn't that bad.
And then Ryan Jensen's got $100 million in a ring in his
pocket. I was just going to say, you finally develop him, and then he gets paid elsewhere. And to be clear, in most cases, and we could debate Ryan Jensen because he had a heck of a run with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before the unfortunate knee injury, which ended his career last year, I guess the year before that. But, with these guys, you do all this time developing them, and then it's a question of, okay, they're finally ready. Who do you invest in long-term, and who do you say, well, he played really well this year, but he's probably not a $10 million guard or whatever it was Ben Powers got from The Broncos, I don't have the contract numbers in front of me, but those are the decisions you have to make. But that's what's tough about this. And that's why where the Ravens are with their O-line right now is a little unnerving because look, they really liked Andrew Voorhees as a prospect. There's no doubt about that. They drafted a kid even with a seventh round pick, knowing that he was not going to play at all last year, physically was not going to be on the field at all last year, and even in a practice capacity. But you like him, but at the same time, they liked Ben Cleveland. They liked Ben Powers. They liked Tyree Phillips, who never really developed into the player they thought he was going to be. How quickly do these guys get up to speed? How quickly are they ready to play? And that's the big question right now facing the Ravens. That's why I said don't sleep on Josh Jones as their left guard. That's why, quite frankly, and I'm probably as guilty of this as anyone, as much as I love Patrick McCary in the sixth offensive lineman spot where he's your backup at all five positions on game day and can do that really well, we probably shouldn't dismiss the possibility, or probability is probably the better word, of Patrick McCary starting somewhere on this O-line, because you don't know if all these young guys are going to be ready to play. And we know that, okay, Patrick McCary, is he going to give you as much upside as what you envision Roger Rosengarten giving you at right tackle? No, of course not. But
But
he
you
might
only
give you the much.
envision that because of their draft pick. That's where the
Exactly.
envision part happens, right?
And that's the part. I mean, whatever Roger Rosengarten is going to be as a player, and look, that could be a really solid, good, maybe even above average right tackle. Is he going to be that week one of his rookie year, though? Is he going to be that week five of his rookie year? Is he even going to be that week 11 of his rookie year? You don't know until you get out on the field and see what these guys look like. And that's why I said, if Patrick McCary ends up being their starting right tackle, that probably shouldn't be shocking. Not saying that's optimal, but he knows the system. He knows how to play all five spots in his sleep, even if he's not going to be great at all five spots. Joe D'Alessandris and John Harbaugh, their heads hit the pillow at night knowing that Patrick McCary is going to at least know his assignment. He might get beaten physically from time to time, but he's going to know his assignment and he's going to post up and you trust him. That's why he's one of the best. If you talk about sixth offensive lineman, you think about like a utility infielder, he might be the best, most valuable in that role in the NFL because he can play all those spots. So when you have an offensive line with three starting jobs that are wide open right now, how could you dismiss Patrick McCary's chances to maybe be one of those starters? Not even because of performance of him, but more so, what's the performance of the other candidates? Are those young guys ready to step in? So I could see a scenario right now, Nestor, if I'm looking into, if you're looking into the purple crystal ball and you say,
Kansas City, Thursday night. Let's go. Bright lights.
McCary might be the right tackle then. But Roger Rosengarten might be ready in, say, week four to take over as the starter. Chris McAllister was a great example of this. He started most of his rookie year. He didn't start week one. Go back and look at it. I think McAllister, want to say he hit the starting lineup in week four or something like that. I could be wrong, but point is, we've seen those examples before where, your rookies, as much as you're hoping, as much as you like them, they're not always ready right off the bat. And that's
And then
why I
there's a
said,
Mark Andrews or an Orlando Brown that come out of the third, fourth, fifth round and play. I mean, that
yeah.
can happen too,
Oh, it
right?
can. And Orlando Brown's a good example. He didn't start week one, but boy, he was ready halfway through his rookie year and he took the job and ran with it from that point. So, you never really know. That's why it's so important for them to have options. And that's why I said, don't dismiss the possibility that they go out and, it could be a draft pick swap, something like that, where you go acquire some other team's left guard or right tackle because, hey, they have a young guy that they like who's cheaper. And they're going to trade their vet to the Ravens. They're going to get a draft pick out of it, and they'll save some cap space in the process. So you never know how it's going to play out. But that's why this week, yeah, I'm taking notice of who's lining up where. And, not so much because I think that that's going to be what it is week one, but you can at least see, all right, who's actually a candidate and who's the guy that maybe isn't a candidate. And like I said, Ben Cleveland, the last couple of years, we found out pretty quickly. He's not really in the mix at left guard. It looks like he's more of a right guard slash backup right tackle, which was kind of where he practiced all last year. So, this year, Ben Cleveland, I expect him to be either working out as a starting right guard or the backup right guard. If he's lining up somewhere else, then I'm kind of scratching my head again. So I'm, and you know, I'm not picking on Cleveland here. Let's be clear. He's the example I'm using to kind of illustrate, you know, what are you really looking for right now? What's true? You know, what's who are the real candidates? Who's kind of lining up in a spot for one day and then they move him back to his regular position? Like Falele is a great example of this. They've talked at different points about maybe putting him at guard. You know, they talked about this last spring, you know, that he might be one of the starting left guard candidates. If he practiced at all at left guard last year, it was at a time when media wasn't out there. I mean, so, you know, they're going to say lots of things. And look, some of it is coach speak, but some of it is they truly don't know yet. I mean, they really don't know how these guys are going to respond. So, yeah, you start to peel back the onion, so to speak, having the full assortment of players on the field this week. And then you kind of see where it ends up. And then we'll see what week one of training camp looks like. And then we'll see what the first preseason game looks like. And then we'll see what week four and five of training camp looks like. And then we'll see what final roster cuts look like. And if Eric DaCosta makes any trades and kind of what it looks like at that point. But it's very fluid, stating the obvious when you have three spots where you don't know who the starter is. So, yeah, I'm interested to see where that what that looks like. And you know, beyond that, I think it's a lot of depth spots, which, as we've pointed out throughout the offseason, the thing that the 2023 Ravens had going for them, in beyond the MVP at quarterback and beyond their star players on either side of the ball, they had so much depth. They had so much quality depth. When you talk about a guy like Geno Stone, when Marcus Williams gets hurt in week one, and Geno Stone, you know, what, led the AFC in interceptions, right? I mean, when you have depth players like that, they've lost a number of those guys, you know, Ronald Darby. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, who wasn't a depth guy, he was a starter. But the point is, they've lost a lot of that depth. So what are you looking at? You're looking to see young guys step forward. You know, hey, David Ajabo, it's go time. You know, I understand you've been hurt the last couple of years, and that's not his fault, but he's a second round pick. They need him to play this year. You know, he doesn't have to be a starter, but he better be in the rotation. Otherwise, then yeah, I'll have some more questions about their outside linebacker room and their pass rush situation. So, you know, you're looking at that. You're looking at the young guys. You know, someone like Jalen Armour Davis, for example, who's a fourth round pick a couple of years ago, outside corner. He played some as a rookie. You know, he was someone that they thought pretty highly of. It hasn't come to fruition. And now, hey, they drafted Nate Wiggins and they drafted TJ Tampa. Jalen Armour Davis, it's now or never. I mean, your roster spot's probably not guaranteed at this point. So you're looking for all those different young guys on either side of the ball to really step forward. And, you know, you mentioned Tylan Wallace. He's a little bit of a different guy at wide receiver because he is such a good special teams player. But yeah, hey, you're in the last year of your rookie contract. Any guy that's in his final year of his rookie deal that's kind of a fringe backup
In
kind of a
his mind,
special
he's going
teams
to catch
guy,
30, 35 balls in the offense this year.
he's
In his
hoping
mind.
so. Now, do I think he's going to? No, but I think he is a valuable contributor on special teams that will keep his roster spot. But hey, they drafted DeVonta Walker and they've got some other young wide receivers in camp that you're trying to see if any of them can stick. So you're doing that at every position. I mean, it's, you know, it's just the it's where they are right now. So just a little less depth this year than they had a year ago. So it's where the mandatory mini camp and obviously the early weeks of training camp, you want to see some of those young guys flash and say, okay, they're not going to be a starter, but can that guy be the number three safety? Can that guy be the number four outside linebacker who's going to be in the rotation? Can that guy be the number four wide receiver to run a go route and hopefully Lamar Jackson can hit him in stride? You know, who are the backup running backs going to be to Derrick Henry? Because you know Keaton Mitchell's not going to be there. You know Justice Hill, who else? So you're trying to slowly but surely get answers for that. And you're not going to get definitive answers this week, but you can start to get some hints and some clues as far as what the team's thinking with where these guys are lining up.
You know, for folks that listen to us and sort of whatever wisdom, you know, my 30 years of being in the locker room brings, and you being 15 years now into this, at this time of the year, to measure expectations for stuff. Because for me, these backups that I was always paying attention to and having out to the barn back in the day that became Mike Flynn or became Zach Orr or became Bart Scott or became anything in that way. The Andrews injury and what we went through with Likely and saying a guy can step up, where we are right now for me with Ronnie Stanley, with Marlon Humphrey, with guys that I'm questioning their physical ability to play 18 games or 20 games, however they're going to need to play this year. The real question is for the game or series of games or half the season or the end of the season, or when you see Kansas City in January, who's going to be playing as opposed to when you see, Kansas City in Labor Day. It really does come from the depth of all of this to say who's going to step up, who's going to play. And it's in this sort of competitive environment where they're perceived to be very good. They have the MVP, they have all this capability. There's a lot of opportunity in this camp for a lot of things to watch for a team that won a lot of football games last year. And a lot of things, to your point, maybe can go wrong, not right, because it's hard to be 13-4. And to think that, 101 wins for the Orioles, it's hard to do that again, as we're gonna find out as the pitching attrition starts with baseball. But to all of our points, the difference makers in all of this is you can piss on Simpson or any of the players here from last year. They were part of 13-4, and they Clowney, guys that came in here that we hadn't heard of that made huge impacts. And you better hope Kyle Van Noy makes as much impact this year as he made last year, because I don't say you paid him to do it, but you're kind of expecting him to do it. And that's where last year doesn't equal this year, and that's where young guys, man, young guys have to step up, and guys like Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley, who are is's, better be. They better be.
Yeah, no doubt. And obviously, Stanley, compensation-wise, he's where they kind of evaluate him as being right now, which is still a starting caliber player, but not much beyond that. I mean, and that's why he took a pay cut and everything. But the other tier, and you mentioned Kyle Van Noy, and this will be my last thought on it, but yes, the young guys, yes, you need your superstars to play like stars. I mean, that's obvious for any team. And you need them to stay on the field, as we saw with the Ravens with Lamar late in the season in 21 and 22, as we saw with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati last year. You don't have your quarterback, you don't have your superstars, nothing else really matters. You might be okay, but you're not gonna be anything that's gonna do anything in January. But I think the other key here, and this is where it's TBD, is you mentioned Kyle Van Noy. Van Noy signed in late September. Clowney signed in mid-August. Ronald Darby signed in mid-August. Arthur Millett signed in late July. Look at those veteran signings. They hit on all of those guys. Can Eric DaCosta, I'm not saying they have to sign four of those guys again, but if you need a guard, or if you need a tackle, or if you need another edge rusher, or if, heaven forbid, someone, a corner goes down with a season-ending injury on the third day of training camp, can you go out and get another veteran corner? Those guys, it's not just signing them or acquiring them via trade. Are they going to hit for you? And last year, all those four guys I just mentioned all made really meaningful contributions for them. That's tough to do that every year too. I mean, Eric DaCosta made a lot of vet signings, and yeah, a lot of them have worked out, but not all of them work out. And that's the same, not just for DaCosta, that's any GM. You're not going to bat 1,000 with that. So they just were so good with all that last year that duplicating that will also be another challenge. That's why it's so important. These young guys, this draft class, last year's draft class, there's going to be, to your point, there's going to be a lot of opportunity. Not so much necessarily beyond starting jobs, O-line aside, but there are a lot of meaningful backup spots that are up for grabs right now where you say, okay, you're not going to start. You're not going to line up as one of the 11 on the first play of the game. But you go look at the final game book, there's a spot, 25 snaps as an outside linebacker to be had. There's a spot as a dime back to be had, or a number three safety, or rotational defensive lineman, whatever. I mean, throw whatever position you want to talk about. So there's a lot of opportunities. So you're hoping that these young guys on the roster are ready to step forward. In the meantime, Eric DaCosta will continue to evaluate what veterans could be out there that they add to the mix at some point between now and, I wouldn't even say September 5th, because as I said, Kyle Van Noy came in late September and still had racked up 9 sacks. So you never know when it's going to come, but you're certainly looking for a number of young guys to really step forward if this team is going to truly be in a position where they don't miss a beat from what they did last year in the regular season.
All these Kyles, I'm worried about Bradish. You're trying to get Gibson back here. We're trying to get Van Noy out on the field. Training camp
Hamilton.
this week. Hamilton, absolutely. Braves in. Phillies in. We are at Coco's on Wednesday. We are at Cooper's in Fells Point on Friday. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, making our water clean as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare, keeping the car on the road. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, Sports. And even like Thomas Dolby, talking, she blinded me with science. We're BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us this week.